Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. As you say, the purpose for meeting today on scallops is to review and approve the scoping document for Amendment 15. The Oversight Committee met a week or two ago, January 25th, to develop or further flesh out some potential options. The Council had already identified four issues for Amendment 15, and four others were sort of endorsed by the committee. Deirdre has a presentation for us to take us through the issues and sort of facilitate adoption of the scoping document.
Thank you, Dave. Good morning. I'm not going to spend any time really going through the materials. They were all mailed to you in advance. There are seven different materials. As I said, most were sent to you in the original council binder, except for two additional correspondence that came in after the mailing, and I'll just mention those at the end so you're aware. I think they should be all on your table this morning. Again, I'm not going to go through all the meeting minutes and so forth. They're all there for your review. I have a brief presentation about a slide or two per issue just to familiarize everyone with the different things we're planning to scope for in this amendment. And the scoping document is document number 4. You may want to pull that out and have it available as I go through the different slides I have for this presentation. Thank you, Karen. The first four issues, as Dave mentioned, were, if you will, pre-approved by the council when we were at the council priority meeting in November. And these four issues were identified, and the council agreed to initiate an amendment to work on these four particular topics. Since then, we have gotten some input from the public, as well as at our last committee meeting, in terms of considering additional issues to include in the scoping document. Those are a little harder to read. They're below in green. And these are the four issues Dave was mentioning that we did decide to recommend adding at the last committee meeting. So, again, now we're up to about eight different issues. I'm going to just go through a slide or so per issue. First, I just want to go over the timeline. And the next slide, very briefly, it seems like a pretty far-out timeline. Again, a lot of this will probably change over time, particularly the dates several years in advance. But in general, if we approve the scoping document today, the scoping process would begin pretty soon after this meeting. We would hold, we're planning about four scoping meetings in the month of April. Then we would have roughly 6 months to develop specific alternatives based on that scoping input. And the November council meeting is the one that we have targeted for the council to approve the draft alternatives, and then the PDT would begin analyzing everything for the next 6 months or so. Hopefully we would stay on target and bring that back to the council the following summer to approve the DSEIS for public hearings. We will have to take a break. I have it highlighted again in green to work on a one-year specification package for the fishery. The last framework we approved was for fishing years 2008 and 2009, and we will have to work on a one-year, hopefully limited in scope, framework during that summer to address fishery specifications and allocations for fishing year 2010. So once we get back on track, we'll begin with public hearings again, work on selection of final alternatives, and again, the main timeline we're working under is to be in compliance with the new Magnuson Act requirements, by March 1st, 2011, and that's the targeted implementation date of this amendment. So working back and forth, that's the deal. The first issue is annual catch limits and accountability measures. Again, the scallop fishery is not subject to overfishing, so we're not required to be in compliance with this until 2011. As you know, formal guidance has not been prepared from NIMS, but it is expected in May 2008. So we are fortunate in this FMP. Hopefully we'll be able to incorporate that guidance before we get too far along in development of these measures. Again, the idea is that potentially catch is going to be allocated to different components of the scallop fishery, and there may even be some overlap with other FMPs, which we'll be talking about, I understand, tomorrow under the groundfish plan. So overall, this would be a pretty major topic and is the primary focus of this action for the most part. The second issue the committee is recommending to be considered is rationalization of the limited access fishery. Again, there's currently excess capacity in the limited access component of the fishery. For years, there has been discussion of potential ways to rationalize that fishery, including specifically days at sea leasing, days at sea and permit transfers, but potential IFQ programs, sectors, et cetera. The list is longer. The scoping document includes kind of bulleted questions about different issues concerned with these different programs, and we would kind of get some feedback from the public and then steer a course in which way people are potentially leaning in terms of reducing capacity. This will be a major component. The PDT will have to spend significant amount of time getting background together and analyzing potential impacts for any of these types of alternatives. Issue number three is a mechanism for sectors in the limited access fishery. I've included the definition of a sector, paraphrased a bit from the sector committee and policy. Again, just to remind people, within the scoping document, we have the current definition of a sector, but I understand we're going to be looking at that this afternoon. So whatever is finally adopted today as policy for what the definition of a sector is, we will include that in this scoping document. Specifically, this issue is going to address a mechanism for the limited access component of the fishery because the Amendment 11 approved a mechanism for the general category component, which we have already kind of addressed. So this would be a focus on the limited access component of the fishery instead. At the last committee meeting, the committee members requested not just to address a mechanism for sectors, but also to solicit specific individual applications for sectors in either component of the fishery. So that is an addition that was added at the committee meeting that the council should be aware of. In general, we have a lot to work with, some input from the sector committee and the groundfish committee already on sectors. However, there will be some scallop-specific things that we will have to address at the committee level first. And certainly if we include allowance of individual sectors, that would be more time-consuming and things that we would need to consider. Issue number four is the overfishing definition revision. And this topic has been discussed several times in the past. Previously, in Amendment 10 is when it was most seriously considered. There was currently the overfishing definition basically underestimates fishing mortality, and it reduces yield and allows for growth overfishing. In Amendment 10, a lot of time was spent developing an alternative that would kind of change how we look at overfishing to set it on a more of a time-averaged approach versus a spatially-averaged approach, which is how we do it now. I'm not going to get into the details of all of this now, but the endorsement from the council was already to include this as a topic for consideration, and we would be looking for additional modifications to that original idea that was proposed several years ago, so the PDT would continue to work on this in the coming year. Issue number five is one of the first additions from the committee meeting, and it has a general topic in terms of modifications to the recent limited access general category IFQ program. Now, specifically, the IFQ program, as you know, is not in place yet. Amendment 11 is scheduled to include it in fishing year 2009. But even during Amendment 11 and the recent framework, there were specific ideas that were raised by the public that were basically delayed for serious consideration because there wasn't time to include them in those actions. The two specific ones mentioned so far are a rollover allowance for IFQ holders to be permitted to bring some portion of their IFQ allocation forward if there's, for some reason, they can't use it during that fishing year, as well as an area-specific allocation of IFQ. If you recall Amendment 11, it's a one-time quota allocation. It's not area-specific, so a vessel is allocated a certain amount of pounds, and they can fish it in whatever area is open to them. This idea would be an actual specific allocation per access area, for example, and that is not something we've yet considered formally in an action. So these two ideas were endorsed by the committee to include in the scoping document for now. The next issue, number six, is related to measures for the EFH closed areas under the scallop FMP, and this is kind of long to get through the details now. Most council members are probably familiar with it. It's been going on for several years. And in general, Framework 1639 which went through the process several years ago, proposed to make the EFH closed areas in the Scallop Amendment 10 consistent with the Multi-Species Amendment 13 areas. However, that action was challenged and NIMS lost because that was considered all in a framework and not an amendment. So currently, the result is that both of these areas are currently closed to scallop gear. And as you know, phase two of the EFH amendment is going to consider these different closed areas in terms of their benefits and impacts on minimizing adverse effects of fishing on EFH, and it is possible or probable that there will be modifications to these areas in the near future. So the Scallop Committee discussed this. They're aware of all these things, but there is some serious concern that phase two, if it gets delayed, will continue to impact the effectiveness of area rotation for the scallop fishery. So I just have a chart here, not to take a lot of time today, because it's been some time since we've talked about this, but in general, in most places, these two plans are consistent. However, in several places, they are not, and this is becoming a problem. The green areas are the areas that are basically left over from the two different EFH closures under the two different plans, and these are the current access portions that the scallop fishery is permitted to fish in under each framework. The pink areas have been closed under the scallop FMP, and the hatched portions have been closed under the groundfish FMP for EFH. And you see in many cases they overlap with each other and it isn't an issue. However, in closed area one, the smaller sliver that it's usually called, the green portion, is technically a little over half the size of what the access area was intended to be under the groundfish closures. So the portion we're talking about of importance is the area to the south of that, which technically from framework 16 should be available to the scallop fishery, but because it was considered in a framework, it is not available to the scallop fishery. So that's the main area that we're hearing input from the industry and others that there's concern that this should be addressed. So the scallop committee discussed this for a pretty lengthy time and ultimately decided to include it in this amendment for scoping in terms of a default in case phase two of the EFH amendment gets delayed for whatever reason, that this amendment could actually consider bringing these two areas together and making them consistent. Specifically, that would mean the hatched portions would become the EFH closed areas under both FMPs, and we would no longer have two FMPs with different EFH closures. To be clear, the committee limited it to this particular alternative only. They didn't want to open the door for all sorts of different alternatives to overlap with work that the Habitat Committee would be doing. So there were some issues about timing and other things that came up. Karen, if you just go to the next slide. And this is just a few bullets background about this particular issue and why the committee decided to include it at this time for scoping. These are a few concerns that the PDT raised in terms of the analysis that would have to be done. I did go back to Framework 16 and pulled out everything that was done in that framework, and we certainly can use that as a template, but many things will have to be updated since it has been several years since that analysis was completed. Issue number 7 is related to improvements to the research set-aside program. If you recall, in Framework 19, this was also raised as something the Council should consider, but we decided we didn't have time at that moment to really do a good job with this topic. So in all honesty, a lot of these issues have been discussed already, and it probably wouldn't be a huge sink of time and resources. In general, it's to look at alternatives to better streamline this process and to maximize the use of the scallop resource for research to ultimately help scallop management. Some specific ideas have been floated around already, and we went back several years. There have been meetings over the years on this topic already that we can use as a starting point. So this was added by the committee. Issue number 8 is the last topic that the committee is recommending including in the scoping document, and this one you're very familiar with. It's changing the fishing year from March 1st to May 1st. This topic has been considered in several previous actions. I think people are familiar with the rationale for why it's considered being out of sync with the framework adjustment process and the difficulty we have of incorporating the most timely data we have available to us to have it in place. Again, we're facing this fishing year not having our management in place in time for the March 1st start of the fishing year. So this alternative would simply move that back 2 months. Excuse me. There is one new consideration that has not been the case in the past in terms of support for this alternative would be now that we're under new ACL requirements, it may benefit this plan to be more in line with the groundfish plan if, in fact, there are ACLs that are allocated to each fishery during the fishing year. So people are familiar with this one. I won't go on and on about it, but that is the last topic that the committee endorsed at that time to include in the scoping document. So now we're up to 8. So the last slide here is just here to kind of spark discussion. Basically, what you want to think about today is should the council scope for these 8 issues, should any of them be considered for removal, or should anything be added? Should any specific changes be made to this scoping document in terms of the terms used or the way it's described in the different bullets? We do have several kind of detailed bullets per topic to kind of help focus public comment. You want to look through those in more detail, perhaps. And basically, if the scoping document is approved today, we will start the scoping process very soon after this meeting. I will be going on a short break for maternity leave, but we have Sarah Potsky on our staff who's going to be doing all of the scoping hearings for us in April with Dave. So we have tentative locations listed on this page of where we plan to go, so we're not going to be slowing down at all about the scoping process for this action. And later in the spring, we can come back to the council and inform you of what we heard during the scoping process. The only thing I want to point out before I finish the presentation is that there were those additional correspondence letters that came in. If you see in your binder, there are 5 different correspondence letters related to tab 4. Excuse me, there's 6. 5 of them are related to Amendment 15 scoping issues, and there's one included in there that is actually not related to Amendment 15 from Oceana related to issues about turtles. But of the 5 that have come into the council, pretty much all of them have been included as an issue to address in this scoping document already. There are only 2 letters that came in after the committee meeting that have issues in them that are not currently in, excuse me, the scoping document. 2 of them are in, I believe it's 6E, correspondence 6E from the Cape Cod Hook Fishermen's Association. This letter includes 2 topics that are technically not in the scoping document yet that you may want to consider. And there's also a letter from Jim Fletcher, one of our advisors, about another issue that is not currently in the scoping document. And lastly, at the committee meeting, under other business, we heard from staff from the observer providers of some concerns they have with the current observer program that is not currently in this scoping document. These are basically the 3 different things we've heard about that I know about anyway, through the committee that we haven't yet addressed. That's it. Thanks.
Okay. Paul Howard.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. As you know, that staff spent a great deal of time developing our priority list for 2008, and the council approved it a while back. And we tried to put as many potential scoping issues in that planning document as possible because that's what we felt we could accomplish in a workload, and that's why we brought forward the 4, and the council approved those 4 issues. I think this is a hugely ambitious workload, and in reality, the committee and council will have about 6 months to do all this work in reality. The NEPA process will take up until May to go out and scope, hold some scoping meetings, and then you have from May until October to develop alternatives for ACLs and AMs, hard tacks, in-season measures, who gets what, general category, limited access, other fisheries, Northern Gulf of Maine quota and AMs, huge amount of work. Reducing capacity with rationalization and, you know, consolidation, and IFQs and all that kind of stuff in 6 months. Develop mechanisms for sectors. What are the qualifications going to be? How many different sets of qualifications are you going to have? And, you know, and we didn't even mention approving sectors at the same time before you even have approved qualification criteria, which is what the committee wants. And the other one that's that I'm really concerned about is addressing EFH. Again, we're talking about 6 months of developing a reasonable range of alternatives for all these things between May and October of 2008. And that doesn't give us much time. So I ask the council to look particularly at number four and on number, not number four, number three, and think about the problems we're going through in groundfish, approving 17 sectors and approving qualification criteria at the same time. So I would recommend that you only approve the qualification criteria, and in subsequent actions you approve sectors. So only do the mechanisms for sectors for limited access fleet in this amendment, and don't include any calls for approving sectors in this amendment. I don't think we have the time. And the other thing is number six. I absolutely don't think we have enough time for the scallop committee to do EFH work while the EFH committee is busy doing the amendment. And that was the purpose of doing an omnibus amendment, so that each individual species committee wouldn't be doing double the work. And if someone says the work is all done, I think the data is old, so we're going to have to redo the work. But that's up to the experts on that. So as we're looking towards scoping, I would suggest that we don't allow any sector proposals, just the mechanism and number three, and we eliminate number six. And the timeline for habitat, which you'll see tomorrow, does allow for the habitat amendment to be done before the scallop amendment is submitted. So the timing is good. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Anyone else in the council? Dr. Pierce.
A couple of questions, principally focused on issue number one, the ACLs and the AMs. I'd appreciate a little bit more explanation as to why the committee feels it's necessary to move this forward now, since I can envision are going to public hearing, scoping comments being received on these concepts when they may not be fully understood by those in the audience. They may not really understand what they're supposed to comment on. What's the logic for moving it forward now, especially since we're not expecting to get the National Standard Number 1 guidelines as proposed from the service until sometime after the scoping comment closes, I think.
Well, there's probably a bunch of reasons why we want to start early, and I agree it's difficult before there's guidance, but we've been expecting this guidance, I believe, for almost a year now, and if we keep waiting, we'll be in a situation like the groundfish plan, and when you start to work backwards, when we're required to be in compliance with it, we really have to start scoping for a major amendment like this now. If we wanted to address capacity first and deal with all of that in one amendment and then start a separate amendment for ACLs, I suppose that's an approach, but in reality, for us to get two amendments finished in 2.5 years is probably not realistic.
The groundfish plan development team has provided recommendations regarding how the council should deal with ACLs and AMs, at least initially. Has the scallop plan development team provided any similar guidance to the scallop committee that could be aired, for example, as part of the scoping process?
We haven't done the depth of work that the groundfish PDT has yet, since they're on a faster requirement for a whole year before us. We are learning a lot from them. I have been attending the groundfish meetings, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of things that are similar. I think we're going to take a lot of cues from how the council makes decisions about the groundfish process and ACLs. And beyond that, we're just hoping to kind of work together on it and share ideas.
Anyone else on the council? Paul Howard.
I would also like to point out that rationalization, you know, leasing and permit transfers, consolidation, all those kind of things usually take an awful lot of time to develop alternatives. So to complicate it by adding some other things into there is and that was one of the highest priorities to do. So just don't have a lot of time to do everything.
Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your counsel, Paul, but I'm going to likely add a motion to add one more thing. It's time to do it. So, and it has a lot to do with I also appreciate a public hearing being scheduled in Portland, Maine, and it will help address a number of the comments I've received about concerning the initial Gulf of Maine, Northern Gulf of Maine TAC. And I'm not going to repeat a lot of the things I've said in the past, but, you know, my comments have been that the Northern Gulf of Maine TAC didn't accurately reflect the capacity of the area because it was developed without state waters landings of the general category of vessels and the limited access vessels within the Northern Gulf of Maine. And I understand that that process doesn't allow for us to incorporate that in Amendment 11, and that's fine and good. But I'm going to make a motion that we include state waters landings of general category vessels and limited access vessels for future development of Northern Gulf of Maine TACs. And that's to be included in the scoping document.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dana Rice. Discussion? Dave Simpson.
I just thought as a point of order, do you want to get the committee's motion up before we do this? Because we hadn't actually done that yet. So I think Karen has that, but...
I'll withdraw my motion.
Or hold it.
Thank you, and yes.
Okay. So the motion is to, on behalf of the committee... to approve the scoping document developed by the Scallop Committee, including 8 specific scoping issues as described in the draft scoping document.
Okay. Now we have the committee motion. It does not require a second. Terry?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll make a motion to amend and add the previous motion to the scoping document.
Dana Rice was the seconder on that. Okay, discussion on the motion to amend? Any discussion? John Nelson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. If I could have just a little bit more clarification. It says for future development... is there a timeline that we were looking at for those types of data to be included in the quotas? My sense is that the maker and seconder weren't looking at it to be immediate, because there was already a quota that was allocated in there after much compromise that the council went through. But that they'd like to have that flexibility for future years after that, when we've all had a chance to probably collect that type of information and make it available to the service. So I guess I'm just asking, is that the intent of the maker of the motion?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, it is. It's we're satisfied with the initial TAC, and as we undertake our stock assessment this coming year, we'd like to have that information be added to what we hope is going to be more inclusive effort data that this proposal would result in. So it would be for all future TACs following the initial, I think it's, Dieter, you can correct me, is it two-year or three-year initial TAC we have here?
Framework 19 would have set the TAC for 2008 and 2009.
On the motion to amend, Sally McGee.
Yeah, I'm just curious as to why we need to be so specific in a scoping document. I think that this issue could be included in item number one, compliance with New Magnuson requirements for catch limits. And if we're, you know, if the concern is how the TAC is going to be set for part of this fishery, then that issue is going to be addressed as we develop catch limits for the whole of the fishery. So I don't know. My inclination is rather than getting so specific in the scoping document that would be something that would come out in scoping under item one, and rather than being, you know, getting down in the weeds in scoping from the council's point of view, then to listen to what the comments are, which no doubt will include this in the context of developing catch limits for the whole fishery.
Pat.
Well, it seems to me that to solve the problem, you can't just add in the TAC from the state waters portion of it. You also have to add in the landings from state permitted vessels. Otherwise, you've still got a disconnect here. So I think, you know, that's I don't know if that's feasible given the monitoring systems that we have, but I think that's the way to do it.
Rodney, then Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, I have a question. If we include this, won't we have to go back and reallocate everything to everyone else that would? Oh, I thought Pat was going to say something. She was just looking. Well, wouldn't we have to go back and reallocate everything or look at everybody's landings? Because it's got to come from somewhere. The TAC has to come from somewhere. Thank
you. I can't answer that question. I don't know if the chair of the committee or the staff wants to comment on that question. I can't get my mind around the Northern Gulf of Maine situation with respect to this. Deirdre?
The Northern Gulf of Maine TAC is a little bit different in that it's actually on the side. It's not, if you recall, the rest of the scallop amendment is getting very rigid in terms of removals for incidental catch, divisions between the two different fisheries, and so forth. The Northern Gulf of Maine TAC was set up on purpose as a separate tax, since it's not assessed the same way, it's not removed from the assessment the same way, the catch levels. So, no, we wouldn't have to go and redo all the other allocations. It's kind of separate that way.
Dr. Pierce.
A clarification of the motion. It says that in the setting of a TAC, we would have to include state waters landings of general category vessels and limited access vessels, the Northern Gulf of Maine, but they're federal permit holders, so wouldn't their landings be included in any TAC that was set? No? So would someone clarify?
Who wants to clarify?
I was nodding the other way, actually, that they would be, so I'll let you.
State waters landings federally permitted general category boats were not counted towards the development of the TAC. To Pat's point, State of Maine is moving forward with actually the bill is being heard tomorrow on a limited entry license. We are developing a harvester level reporting system for our scallop vessels that will be in place this year. And to Sally's point, well put, but this is a feisty issue in the state of Maine, and if we're going to have a hearing in the state of Maine, it will help elicit comments.
Deirdre?
I just wanted to clarify one thing. It's true in the past, in the previous years we used in Amendment 11, those state water landings were removed, but I thought the discussion this morning was that this was an idea for the future. And I think David's right that in the future, all federally permitted limited access vessels, their catch from state waters will count, and it will be included as catch in the Northern Gulf of Maine. So while it was treated differently then, they will all be included under this TAC in the future.
Dave Gaethel, did you want to? No. Anyone else on the council? On the motion to amend. Go to the audience for some limited comment. Anyone in the audience? Seeing none, back to the council. Last chance. Jim Salisbury.
I have a question. Given Deirdre's last statement, isn't this then a non-issue? That if they will be under the current plan?
I'm a little confused myself, too, because I think the intent would be, I thought the intent was that in the past, the state of Maine would have preferred if these types of landings were included so that that initial TAC could be higher. But now that we've put this in place, these landings will be included in the future setting of the TAC. There might still be an issue with limited access vessels, because if I'm correct, I'm not sure if limited access landings from this area are going to count against the TAC during the year. I'll have to check on that one. But the first one definitely will be included, so I don't know if this is really going to increase the total catch, as I think the real intent is of this motion. I'm confused, too. Sorry.
Is the intent of the motion to create a place in the future that you can go back in time and requalify or qualify landings that were not captured in the initial allocation? Terry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, the intent is looking towards the future to most accurately reflect the capacity of the Northern Gulf of Maine.
Anyone else on the council? Dana.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To try to clear it up and instead of muddy the one. For me, this obviously, when we worked through this, there were some landings that I felt, and a lot of people in the state of Maine felt, that weren't included that should have been included. There was no mechanism to do this. I think by including this motion, and the reason I second this motion is it allows that to happen, and it allows the data that the state of Maine is going to develop and record to be at some future point to be placed in there. My worry is if we go out for scoping without this and this isn't included now, we may come up with some numbers that may not do anybody any good in the future. And I think this, for me, hopefully, this does it. And remember that this is just going out for scoping. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anything further? Jim Salisbury.
Yes, I have a question again to kind of clarify the intent. Terry, if I may ask Terry through the chair, is the there's been, because of the way the TAC is set, a federally permitted vessel, when the TAC is closed now, will not be able to fish within state waters. And is this a method to set, to in effect add in what he would have caught in state waters anyway into the federal TAC? Therefore, it wouldn't be closed until he had basically caught that amount. You know, he wouldn't be precluded from catching what he normally caught in state waters because of this fact that the TAC is only in federal waters and it closes and then he can't fish in state waters. Is that part of your intention, or if you understand what I'm getting at?
I'm not exactly sure what you're getting at, Jim, but I think so. The intent is for a federally permitted general category fisherman who has historically fished in the Northern Gulf of Maine to have his landings in state waters be counted towards the development of the TAC, so that and I guess to your point is when the TAC closes, and then these state waters landings and that of the other state waters fishermen would accrue towards the development and the in the filling of the Northern Gulf of Maine TAC.
Well, that I think that answers my question, because I mean, the problem that we've seen is by setting this TAC just on the landings that the federally permitted vessel caught in federal waters, and then let's just, for example, say half of his catches in federal waters and half in state waters. And so he goes out and he catches his half, or someone goes out and they catch the half in federal waters, and that closes, he is now precluded from fishing in state waters. So his catch would have been cut in half for the year. But if you count those into the pool, so to speak, he would be, they would still, they would be, his ability to catch that amount would not be precluded. He would have that ability, whether it's in state or federal waters, and it would be added to the overall area's TAC. And in, I think in Pat's comments, you need to know what the only state water landings are in order to sort of segregate them out and say now the state is going to close fisheries only when the state water vessel, state permitted vessels only are catching a separate tack. So I think while this may be considered to be solved in the future, in other words, that theoretically the next round when we set the tax, that's how it'll be done. It may be. I don't know whether that's the case or not, but certainly this kind of amendment would assure that that's on track for that. So I think in that regard, it may be, if it's, I don't believe it's redundant, but I don't think it would do any harm in order to do it that way. Thank you, Mr.
Okay, I think I'm getting my mind around it. Terry?
Yeah, one last thought here is this may seem to be pretty insignificant to most of the folks around the council, but it's a big deal to the handful of general category scallopers from not just Maine but from northern Massachusetts and New Hampshire who have traditionally fished in the wintertime.
Anyone else on the council? The motion to amend. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Ten in favor. Opposed? Five opposed. Motion to amend carries 10-5 with two abstentions, three abstentions. Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to present another motion to amend. I'd like to move to amend the original motion by eliminating number 6 from the document, measures to address EFH closed areas under the scallop FMP. If phase 2 of the EFH amendment is delayed.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave Gaithel. Discussion? Dave?
Yes, thank you. The phase 2 is galloping along apace. I don't see any need to include this. Paul Howard already stated that it's an extra complication. It serves no purpose except to muddy the waters.
Anyone else? Jim Odlin.
Can I ask the chair of the committee a question through the chair of the council? What do you see a need to include this EFH adjustments, and is it in case that the omnibus amendment gets bogged down, or in order to change EFH for scallops?
Thanks. Yeah, it's a very important issue to the industry. Obviously, there's as we've talked about before, over 20% of the scallop resource is effectively locked up in these areas, so it makes a big difference to all the other issues that we're considering and scoping in terms of capacity, need to reduce capacity. If the available resource were 20% larger, you'd have less need to reduce capacity. So it's extremely important, and what we've struggled with is where's the best place and most expedient way to get this done. And heard from Paul that it may be most expedient to do it through the EFH and the Habitat Committee. That puts a lot of, you know, in terms of the scallop industry, a lot of trust and faith in that process to keep on track and ultimately correct this, what amounts to a technical, in my view, you know, sort of a technical glitch that closed up some of these areas. So, again, I think it's one of our more important issues to deal with, and the question for the council is where's the best mechanism to get it done? Is it here or is it in EFH or the Habitat Committee, rather?
Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At the committee meeting, there was extensive discussion about this, and I think just to bring up a couple of points that were brought up then, that first of all, and I think Dave alluded to it, this is a significant amount of scallop resource that's locked away, and it's something in the order of $250 million potential. And to think that, well, this is going to be complicated and time-consuming and it better be done elsewhere that may come a little later, I don't think is doing justice to the industry that's involved here. Secondly, I think that while comments have been made that the habitat amendment is on track, I think it's clear from many of our earlier meetings that the most difficult part is the part that's just now beginning. It's the part where a great deal of there are many conflicting opinions about what should be done in this case. The earlier part was rather more the scientifically based factual gathering, and I think keeping that on track, that also took a lengthy portion of time, but the most difficult time is ahead. And so I think it's likely that the time schedule set out may not be able to be held. I would hope it can, but I'm concerned that it can. And to hold what I think is considered a technical fix hostage to that, I don't think is very well serving the industry in this case. And it's a very significant piece of the potential scallop fishery. Thank you.
Anyone else on the council? Sally McGee.
Yeah, I think it needs to be clarified. And in Deirdre's presentation, she showed the chart that indicated all the different statuses of the areas within closed area one. If this change was pursued through Amendment 15, the change that would result would have the scallop habitat closed areas in line with the Amendment 13 groundfish habitat closed areas. Then very shortly after that, changes would need to be made again to have all of those made in line with the new omnibus habitat closed areas. So, it's going to be a change that is going to be short-lived if this is something that's pursued through the scallop committee. It's a vicious circle. Basically, if we pursue a change through the habitat or through the scallop amendment, then it's going to be changed again through the habitat amendment, which is where we've been investing for years in making a comprehensive change to make the habitat closed areas more appropriate for all of the fisheries, which gets to the point of the omnibus amendment, which was to put all of the fisheries that the council manages on the same footing. If we put this habitat change in the scallop amendment, then we're putting the scallop fishery ahead of other fisheries because there are limited resources within the council to be able to work on habitat issues. So, it's not like the habitat amendment's going to keep going and the scallop amendment habitat components are going to keep going. Someone's going to have to come over from habitat to work on the habitat components of the scallop amendment at the same time. So we're going to have to put the omnibus on hold while scallop is put the scallop fishery and the habitat measures in the scallop amendment are put ahead of everything else. So I think we need to just stick with the plan to deal with habitat in a comprehensive way rather than dealing with one emergency after another and never catching up with what the intent is, and that is to deal with habitat in a comprehensive manner. Thank you.
Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, I'm going to probably say the same thing just in a little simpler way. Do you want to fight this battle twice or do you want to fight it once? I only want to fight it once, and I think the place to fight it's at Habitat, and so that's why I support the motion.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, we have consistently rejected the idea of two tracking issues. We did it with the groundfish, and now we're talking about two tracking a major issue again. It makes no sense whatsoever. The proper place for habitat issues to be discussed and settled is in the Habitat Committee. That's why we have the Habitat Committee. To try to two-track it is a total waste of time. So I strongly am going to favor this amendment.
Dr. Pierce.
I understand some council members' concerns about going on a dual track. Obviously, that would not be very productive. However, the Scholar Committee has spent a great deal of time on this, working with the industry, and I'm assuming, not being on the Scholar Committee, that they had some excellent reasons for bringing this forward. Some of those reasons are described in the draft scoping document. I assume that the industry, the advisors, have weighed in on this issue at the meetings that we have held, and that's one reason why it's in this document. So, It's a scoping document. I think it makes sense to keep it in to see if indeed there is support for that initiative.
Okay, I'm going to go to the audience. Anyone wishing to speak in favor of the motion to amend? I'll take some limited comments against the motion to amend. Dave Ferula.
David Frula for the Fisheries Survival Fund. We strongly oppose the motion to amend. Back a couple of months ago, the reason that scallop open area days at sea were reduced by 30% was because of all the EFH closures. The reason being presented why the overfishing definition needs to be changed is because of all the EFH closures. This issue relating to harmonizing the Amendment 10 and Amendment 13 habitat closed areas came back in 2005 or 2006. I can't even remember what year it was. It was quite a while ago that court decision came down. And nothing's been done. It's always been, well, we'll get to it, we'll get to it. What we're trying to do at this point is to see if we can get this done for looking to be 2012, and that's what our concern is, because right now the way it's set up, if you look at the timelines for scallops, in January 2009 through June 2009, they're going to set specs for the fishery for that's Framework 21. Which will set the specs for 2010 and 2011. So we're going to miss that train. Whether it's done through the Habitat Omnibus or whether it's done through Amendment 15 to the Scallop Plan. The earliest time for submittal, if you look at the EFH timeline, final council vote in June 2009, which would be the same meeting as you need to take final action on Scallop Framework 21. So you'd be in a perfect world, if the habitat didn't slip at all, you might have the chance to add this back in for 2010 and 2011 if everything fits. If not, it's going to get bumped over into 2012 and 2013. And then the question becomes, what's the best vehicle? Normatively, the EFH amendment is the best vehicle. I would note that the process for the omnibus started in July 2004, and it took until September of 2007 to make it through what was supposed to be the technical part. That's over 3 years. And now we're discussing the ability to do all the gear effects and all the management in a little bit more than a year, soup to nuts. That's Again, that seems pretty ambitious. Laying against that is Scallop Amendment 15, which is going to have to be in place by March 2011. There is a due date there because the ACLs are going to be mandated by law to go in. So there, we know that if we can include this in scoping, there's at least a closed end of that process that might allow us to get these, get this harmonized by 2012 and 2013, because as I calculated out, you're going to be doing your specs for 2012 and 2013 between January 2011 and June 2011. So somehow you know what the council's going to do on Amendment 15 before then, you ought to be able to act sort of in that time for 2012 and 2013. Again, it would be our strong preference that this all get handled in Habitat, but there's really no guarantee that that's going to happen. And at some point, this is a relatively technical fix. When the court looked at the issue, the court didn't say the council was arbitrary and capricious. It didn't say the analysis stunk. What it said was you followed the wrong process. So we would strongly urge you to make sure that you have the ability to fix this in time for 2012 and 2013. Because, again, as I started and I'll finish, and I appreciate your time, the reason that we're going through all these gyrations on the overfishing definition and cutting days is because you don't have access to these EFH areas. This is a decision the council made a long time ago. Thank you.
Mr. Frula, I have a question for you. I'm sensitive to the timelines, the dual processes, and where's the appropriate place to handle this issue. I'm looking at document number one, which is the timeline for scallop actions. And I'm not sure if you have it in front
of you.
I do. Okay. At the bottom of the document, it says, if IFQs are included for consideration in Amendment 15, then timeline will need to adjust to include required referendum vote. I didn't know what your position was on the inclusion of IFQs in this scoping document and for this amendment, given the fact that we have a statutory deadline for 2011. If you think that inclusion of the IFQ language is important enough in this scoping document.
The Survival Fund does not have a position on IFQs.
Okay. Paul Howard, did you have a question?
Yes, just on the timing, Dee, maybe you can correct me, but for Amendment 15, we're looking at implementing March 2011, not 2012. So with the Scallop Amendment 2011, with the Habitat Amendment 2010, spring 2010, so it's a year earlier, we're talking about the Habitat Amendment submitting it in August of 2009. And then that means implementation, spring of 2010. So right now I look at Habitat a year earlier than Scallops. So I just want to make sure I'm not looking at anything different than that.
Yeah, that's true. I just also wanted to clarify, these timelines are very confusing. It's no surprise people are a little lost. But just to be clear, Framework 21, that's all true, and also Framework 21 will only include specifications for 1 year. It's not going to be our typical biennial framework. It's just going to be for 2010, and that's on purpose so that when Amendment 15 comes in place for fishing year 2011, it will be in compliance with the ACLs, which we're expecting could be different than how we manage now. So we want Amendment 15 to include measures for 2011 and 2012. So arguably, again, I agree it's very tight, but if everything goes as planned, the EFH amendment, the council will have a sense of where those things are by the summer of 2009, and arguably, actually, it's not going to be the same meeting, but later in the fall, when we have to make final decisions for Framework 21, we could, I agree it's very close, but we could include whatever progress the EFH folks are on, we could include that in Framework 21 for 2010. Again, if it slips any bit, then 2011 would be the earliest time, but it's not 2012.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. 2011, 2012, it's still a long time away. Respectfully, what I hear Ms. Belke saying is that any slippage at all, and you might want to have a stopgap, and that's all we're asking for, because this may actually be able to be handled for all for Amendment 15 if it reached that point. Thank you.
In favor of the motion to amend? Ron, you're in favor of the motion to amend? Okay. Kip Brogan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kip Brogan with Oceana. We're in favor of this for all the reasons that were laid out by the council members. Just looking forward to this one. If there is such a large abundance of scallops in that area, the concern comes up if the council were to take this action and just open this area up. Is there going to be a race on, and is that the best way to use those scallops that are in that area? Or should the scallop committee look at some sort of way to make this either an access area or part of the rotational management scheme to make the best use of those scallops? Thanks.
Chris Kellogg.
I just wanted to correct what I view as a technical point. The relook at the overfishing definition is not an issue that's tied in with the definition of this closed area. It ultimately, what the industry gets will be affected by what's tied into the closed area. But the look at the overfishing definition is to make sure that you're not overfishing open area scallops as well as closed access area scallops, and thereby maximize the yield for the fishery as a whole.
I just want to talk to the closed area one issue. Appreciate it, Chris. There's been a couple comments that are not completely on target. But in terms of closed area one, I don't want people to leave with the impression that there's this huge amount of biomass in there, like elephant trunk, for example. It's nothing like that. I don't want to say there's nothing. There definitely is large scallops that are ripe for being harvested in that area. There's not a lot of small scallops showing up. You would definitely want to harvest those larger scallops before there is a recruitment event, which would then potentially close this area. This area, and just to respond to Gibb, is already included in the access areas that we already considered under Framework 16. It is already part of the controlled access program, so that's how it would be fished. It wouldn't just all of a sudden open. In terms of the amount that's in there, tops, we're talking about a trip. It's not something that is this, you know, bountiful amount of resource. It's definitely something that will help alleviate fishing pressure in open areas and so forth and help the program work better. But I just don't want people to have the impression that it's this gigantic resource.
Thanks, Deirdre and Chris. I'll take one more against and one more in favor. That's right, Ron. Against?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz, Fishery Survival Fund. Again, as David said, we're against this. Historically, after the court had ruled, the council had promised that we'd revisit this in the next available amendment. We didn't do it in Amendment 11 because that was tailored to general category. What I would suggest is we're talking about a scoping document to get the public's view of what's important and what's not important. And I would suggest that you leave this in the scoping document so that we could and ask the public what they see as priority. And it would be interesting to see whether it falls out on IFQs and sectors or whether it falls out on the access to these areas. Now, right, this particular area has about 3,000 metric tons of harvestable-sized scallops in it when the boundary changes, if they're alive by 2012. Okay? It's the point of the scallop plan is rotational area management. The way we decrease our impacts on habitat, which is something the EFH amendment is supposed to look at, is high catch per unit effort, minimizing our bottom time. That analysis is going to have to be done, and I asked whether who's going to do it. It's going to be done by the scallop PDT. Regardless of whether it's in the scallop amendment or the habitat amendment, the analysis is going to be done by the same group of people. How many scallops are on the bottom? How much time, swept area, will it take to harvest them? What will be the impacts of harvesting them? That information is a scallop amendment information. We need to define the scallop access areas, and not just this area, all the access areas. So I would think that the council should ask in this scoping process the public, what are the priorities of these 8 or 10 choices? Not for the council to decide now that number 3 is low, number 6 is low. Get the public's information. Bring the information back. Look at the issues. Look at what the public comments are. And then decide to close down on the scoping. That's always been the process here. I don't know why you don't want transparency and don't want the public to comment on this. I would suggest to make it clear in the scoping document that there are limited council resources. What does the public prefer? What do the stakeholders prefer, given a limited number of resources available to develop this amendment? That's what scoping's for, and I wish that you would leave the scoping document as is and not start whittling it down before you get the public input. Thank you.
John Williamson, and then I'm coming back to the council.
Yeah, John Williamson for Ocean Conservancy. And very briefly, I'm also a member of the Habitat AP and have some familiarity with the SCALA plan and the Development Amendment 10. The in favor of this amendment for two reasons. One is, first of all, that the nobody should be surprised that there are scallops in the EFA's closed areas. That was always the expectation that those areas were closed for management of habitat effects and the rightful way for revisiting management of these areas is through the Habitat Omnibus Amendment. That is where you're going to create your comprehensive approach to this, and the analysis can best be done. When that takes place will be the timeline for that amendment development. It's entirely independent of scallop management, and hopefully by the end of that we're going to have better management for habitat and better management for scallops down the road. The second issue is that this the timeline for the scallop amendment 15 is really critical to address the ACL and AM measures and to give that aspect of the amendment as much attention as it is going to demand, and so the fewer things that are included in this amendment, the better, as far as making sure that you meet your 2010 and 2011 deadlines for those. So I would urge that you keep this scoping document narrowly focused on the must-dos for the scallop amendment. Thank you.
Okay, back to the council. Ready for the question? All those in... John Nelson?
Yeah, I didn't even raise my hand, Mr. Chairman, but thank you for noticing my puzzled look. Could Paul go over again why drop it from the scoping at this time as far as manpower or staff power? I think that was the one of the points that he raised earlier and felt that it was appropriate to focus it on the Habitat Amendment, which I don't necessarily disagree with, but as has been pointed out, a lot of times we go to scoping to get that public comment. Is that a problem for staffing, or are we just concerned that, you know, you had so much momentum going afterwards, to be frank about it, that nobody wants to then drop it after the scoping? And I know those are hard things to deal with, but, and maybe it's because I'm short, you know, I wouldn't mind, or I don't mind saying, hey, tough luck, you know, we're only going to do so much. But I just kind of try to get that sense again from Paul as far as he's analyzed this. He's the one with the feel for what should be done based on the staff power that he has, and I'd like to just hear it again.
Well, I think Ron Smolowitz was absolutely right. The way we've done things in the past is say the whole council has a bite of the amendment and comes up with 18 things for the amendment, whatever they want to see. And then we go out to scoping and ask the public, what do they want to see in the amendment? And what we've been moving towards with limited resources, limited time, more requirements under Magnuson is scoping is now different. We're not going to go out and say, what do you want and what do each of the council members want? We as a staff have sat down and say, we can do these four very important things. And we're going to scope for these four and ask the public for input to those four things. What are the different ways you want us to do those four things? Now, if they come back and say, we'd like you to do 5, 6, and 7, that's fine. And a lot of times they'll do that. We also want you to look at this. And then that's fine. You'll know at the end of scoping from all the public hearings, this is what they think of these four issues. And by the way, they want to see IFQs or something like that. So that's the way we've been moving in the direction we've been moving in because of increased requirements on Magnuson, limited resources. We have to be focused on what you want to accomplish and what are the council's priorities. And we have advisors, we have public meetings, that we have species committees that should be fed what's important, and then we do that, and then we've come up with those four things. Now, if I thought, and I mean, we've heard a number of different things that I don't really know the real answer to. I know in my gut, 8 things is way too much. We're not going to get 8 things done. We might be able to get those 4 things done if we don't include sector proposals, just the qualification criteria, everything. If we have 10 sectors come in, on top of developing the criteria for sectors for limited access, in 6 months, along with rationalization, is going to take a long time. So right now, I'll tell you, and Dee will back me up, we have time to do those 4 things. We don't have 6 months to do everything. Now, the arguments that are being made for Habitat is that it's almost like a technical thing. I'm not so sure it is. If it is, we should know it or get some indication that it is. But I think the data that was used to do that is old, and we're going to have to do a lot of Habitat data and all that I think might be already developed in the other plan. But I'm not so sure it's just a technical thing to make us, Amendment 10 look like Amendment 13. I think that the Habitat Amendment has developed a lot of new information that may change things all along. So I hope that answers your question, that we're not scoping for what do you want to do. We're scoping for 4 things initially, and give us input on those 4, and it's grown.
Rodney.
Yeah, I appreciate what Paul's saying, but we did listen to the advisors. We did listen, and this was a committee. And I agree that we might only be able to do 4 things, but we might be doing the wrong 4 things. That's why I'm in favor of including this in the amendment. Thank you.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you look at the things that are on here, number one is ACLs and AMs. And we know from what we've done with the groundfish already that ACLs and AMs are complex, almost nightmarishly complex, and that's a huge job by itself. Rationalizing, sectors, all of the things we see on here are very contentious and time-consuming issues. If we start also adding in stuff that's already being done by another committee, then all you're doing is compounding the job and making it less possible to get it done. I think Paul is right. I think you have to get to focus in a little more, and I don't think it's appropriate for habitat issues to be handled in this fashion. We're doing this job with the Habitat Committee, and we'll continue doing it. So I urge support of this. Thank you.
Anyone on the council has not spoken to the issue? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Eight opposed. Eight. Chair does not vote. Motion does not carry. Anything else? Dave?
To issue three in the list, the one that was highlighted by Paul on sectors. Paul's already indicated the staff issue. He's clarified that in response to John Nelson's question. It's what we want to do, what we think needs to be done, what can be done in light of the resources that we have available to us. Sectors are very complicated animals. We've learned that through our dealings with groundfish. Right now, the groundfish committee is struggling underestimating the nature of the discussions that we're having right now on sectors, but we're trying to respond to a long list of bullets concerns that Pat Kirkle, the service, has expressed regarding all the nuts and the bolts of sectors and things that have to be addressed, issues that have to be addressed. So I see the same sort of a problem or list of issues attached to any discussion that we may have in this amendment regarding sectors. Frankly, I think that it makes a lot more sense to focus on IFQs as opposed to sectors. I wish we had done that with groundfish, but we can't for a number of very good reasons. Frankly, I think sectors are IFQs, but I know we've had some legal opinions expressed regarding that, and we can move it forward without having to go through any necessary referendum. I don't believe it makes a great deal of sense for us to move this issue forward. I would rather focus on IFQs, but I'm not going to make a motion to that effect because of the timeline that we have to live with, and, of course, it would take forever to get the amendment developed and then implemented if IFQs were included. So with that said, Mr. Chairman, I would make a motion to remove Issue 3, Mechanism for Sectors and the Limited Access Fishery, from the scoping document.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dana Rice. Discussion? Jim Otlin?
Yeah, I support this motion. I think you can get to the same place with item two. Days at sea leasing, for instance, or permit stacking, and it's a much simpler process. Having the experience with the sectors in groundfish, I would support this motion, and the capacity issue should allow the scallop industry to mitigate any issues they have with capacity. So I'll support the motion.
Dave Gaethel?
Yeah, the question for the maker of the motion is the intent then not to seek any comment on the creation of a mechanism for sectors, or are we just not going to accept any sector applications?
Well, in a sense, it's both. No mechanism and no accepting of applications. Obviously, without a mechanism, you can't accept applications. I would much rather have this council, again, focus on the IFQ concept as opposed to moving forward with the sectors, since we'll be bogged down with sectors for an awful long time, and I suspect that we'll eventually arrive at the conclusion that we need to do with the limited access fishery what we've done with the general category fishery, which is the IFQ. But that all remains to be seen as time unfolds. So, mechanism, I've answered your question.
Anything further? Paul Howard.
I think, Dee, you might, this is totally taking out sectors, so we wouldn't even, and then if you wanted sectors down the line, you're going to do another amendment. You do know that. So what I was looking at is saying you could put in the mechanism for sectors, that lists the qualification criteria and everything, and then that gets approved, and then the following framework you do, you could call for sector proposals that would use that qualification criteria and things like that. But if you want to totally take it out, that's fine too. But I don't know if the Species Committee has even talked about that, but I guess I don't have a problem as long as the industry doesn't have a problem. And number two does take care of it, so.
Dave Pierce.
Yeah, just a clarification. You suggested we get rid of item three, and this gets rid of item three, but now you appear to be backing off?
Just the part of. On item three, just the part of having, while we're developing the sector policy, here comes 10 sectors, like groundfish.
I hear what you're saying. My motion still stands as is. I still think that the logic is sound. I would rather move towards IFQs and not give the industry the impression that we'll be moving forward with wholesale sector development. That, I think, is just a recipe for disaster and pulls us off of what I think is the better track, which is IFQ consideration.
Anyone else in the council? Go to the audience. Oh, sorry. Sally?
I'm going to oppose this motion. I think we need to, at the very least, keep in this amendment the option for developing a mechanism to create sectors. I agree that this fishery, I think, would be is more appropriate for developing an IFQ system. But if there's interest in the fishery to develop sectors, then we shouldn't be crossing this off the list of potential directions for the fishery to move before we've even gotten out of the gate. Obviously this region is saddled with the what I think is unfortunate burden of the extra high bar of the two-thirds referendum requirement for IFQs. So we need to give the fishery options as it's considering how it's going to operate under a very different system with catch limits and as we move away from effort controls. And IFQs certainly is one very straightforward way of doing that. Sectors is another way of doing that. So eliminating this right out of the gate makes the choices unnecessarily narrow. The other thing is we've talked a lot about the challenges that we've had in the groundfish fishery and developing sectors there. And obviously these are very different fisheries while there are some of the complexities that would translate into the scallop fishery too. I mean, we have to think about a multi-species fishery versus a single species fishery that's very, very different. So, I think when we think about doing the same thing over again in the scallop fishery, that's not necessarily true because it's such a different fishery, and it's going to be a lot more straightforward to develop sectors in the scallop fishery than groundfish. So, again, I'm going to oppose this motion and hope that the discussion leads to at least keeping the mechanism for sectors in the scoping document.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, one reason why I put forward this motion was the list of questions that are shown in the draft scoping document that relate to sectors, and it seems to me that those sectors beg for analyses, beg for prolonged council discussion regarding, what to do. It's not simply a mechanism. It goes far beyond that. But if those questions relate to a mechanism, then indeed my case is furthered because it would take just too long and would bog us down.
Go to the audience. Anyone wishing to speak in favor? Anyone wishing to speak against? Everybody's ready for lunch. Back to the council. Anything further? Paul Howard?
What about this was primarily an amendment for limited access sectors. We approved general category sectors, but, and I think Dee needs to help me out here, do we want to accept sector proposals for general category in this amendment, or do we want to do it in the framework? Again, look at it at the time and everything, and there's liable to be many or some general category sectors that want to be part of this amendment. Has the committee talked about that?
Well, at the committee level, the committee was supportive of including this bullet number 4 on this page of the scoping document for this issue, which includes consideration of specific sector applications for either fishery, and the intent of that was to recognize that they already accepted a mechanism for general category participants, so this could be one of the vehicles to actually implement a sector for the general category fishery. But it was definitely clear at the committee level that this bullet was also intended to include the availability for limited access vessels to come forward with specific applications as well. The issues, there is that one correspondence I mentioned earlier this morning from the Cape Cod Hook Fishermen's Association that does request a specific sector to be considered in this amendment. The only thing I would note about that is the few bullets and background that the letter provides include kind of issues that are not currently allowed in the sector mechanism as approved under Amendment 11. We would have to, for example, the request is to allow the sector participants to eliminate the possession limit or possibly increase it. For example, that's something that Amendment 11 was specific about not allowing. So something like that, there are some modifications to the mechanism approved in Amendment 11 that would have to be revisited in this amendment if, in fact, a sector application had all those types of details in them. So it can open up, I suppose, a relook at the mechanism that was just approved in Amendment 11 if, in fact, we start accepting certain applications with those further ideas that are not currently permitted. So if that helps answer it, I think the committee felt that it was an opportunity for both fleets to apply. Certainly the next framework or any other framework, not necessarily 21, could include a timeline for general category sectors, and it wouldn't have to be this amendment. It could be another framework.
Dave Gaethel.
Yeah. I mean, whether you agree with Dr. Pierce's motion or not, the motion is clear and it's simple. It gives you an either-or choice. The big problem we've been in with sectors from day one, from where I sit here, is that we're trying to create a cart, we're trying to find a horse to put in front of it, and we're trying to see if the wheels turn. At the same time, we're trying to find people to buy our new buggy. And we're all trying to do it at once. And you can't do it that way. And it just became painfully apparent from the discussion we're having right now that we're headed down that road yet again. Now, I see sectors as a bridge to IFQs. I still think they're an IFQ. I don't care what you want to call them. You know, you can call a skunk a raccoon all you want. It's still a skunk. And I just think that we ought to be upfront with everybody right off the bat and say, you know, either we are going to do sectors or we're going to go to IFQs, which is what David has just said. And I actually support this because it's clear, it's simple, it's unambiguous. I don't want to get into another muddled mess like we're in with groundfish right now where we're trying to build the cart, find the horse, and sell the new buggy all at the same time because we're not getting any of them done. So, I would urge you to vote up or vote down David's motion based on its merits. And then if you want to come back and do something like Sally said, that's a separate motion. But I think we ought to, vote this one up or down first. Thank you.
Anyone on the council hasn't spoken? Dana Rice.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, as a seconder, I would support this motion. There's obviously a difference between groundfish and the scallop fishery. And all things considered, sectors are a tool that we're looking at for a lot of reasons. But all things considered in this fishery, I think they could be held off for the time being and maybe work through some of the other processes. And it obviously, from Paul's comments, I think it would help the scallop amendment go forward. It would relieve the burden there. I'm not going to go into a lot of the details, but I just don't think that leaving those in now are critical to this amendment. I think a time could be served much better in other places. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Dana. Pat Kirkle.
I support the motion, Mr. Chairman. I just don't see how the council is going to do all of this within the statutory time frame that you have. The purpose of this amendment is to do annual catch limits and accountability measures. And instead, I think it's starting to evolve into a major revision of the scallop fishery management plan. And frankly, I don't think that should be piecemealed, which is sort of the approach we're talking about doing here. And I'm becoming increasingly concerned that people are starting to look at sectors as sort of a quick and easy way to do ITQs while they really do ITQs, and that's not how sectors should be used. We can't keep changing management programs. We need to decide what the goal is for these fisheries and then design them a management program that's consistent with it. And I just think we're taking a very seat-of-the-pants approach, frankly, to this. So I support the motion.
Anything else? Ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Fifteen opposed. One opposed. Paul Howard? And we're going to take lunch after this.
I think we do need an answer as staff in terms of workload. If general category sector applications come in, do you want them as part of this amendment or part of the framework? And when they come in and they're contrary, like Dee said, contrary to the existing Amendment 11 guidelines, then you're going to have to change it in this amendment, which is another workload. So what do you want to do with general category sector applications? Do you want to address it in this amendment, or do you want to address it in the framework that follows, 21? Is that a legitimate question, Dee?
It is. I don't think it necessarily has to be Framework 21. If you recall, that is going to be very fast. Just in the summer, we won't have time to potentially review 15 applications or something. I think it's possible. If we don't get a lot, we can add it in that one to be the fastest, which would mean it could be implemented for fishing year 2010. If it's not possible to get in that framework, we could initiate a separate framework for just that topic.
Okay. It's 20 minutes to one. What's that? No, we're not done with the document. We're not done with Scallop. We're going to come back from lunch and pick up the scoping document, just so everybody's clear on that. Come back at 2 o'clock.